Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by Susan Demas, Emily Lawler, Craig Mauger. John Roerink was here and gone, but I know that he will be returning here very shortly as we talk about the most exciting MERS podcast of the entire year. And this should be airing on New Year's Eve, even though we're taping a few days prior to that. Our House member, Senator, and Democrat of the Year. We're not doing any freshmen this year, Susan. Because there's no freshmen, really. Except, I guess there were two. There were two freshmen this year.
And we decided that that would be a little lame and hurtful. You know, I mean, if you didn't get it, you had a 50-50 chance.
Right.
Yeah, we had Joe Graves and Tim Grimmel, and we could have pitted the two against each other, kind of like a cage match.
That's an idea for next year.
Yeah. We don't need to do that now, do we?
No. I mean, I don't think either of them want to get hurt. And they're eligible for the other categories, mind you. So.
Well, and they both did an effective job. One scared Paul Scott away from running again. The other became a caucus leader after only 7 months on the job or whatever that ended up being. I mean, that's... Both of those are very impressive in their own right. Okay, well, let's dive into House Member of the Year, Susan. We had some nominees. Craig, since you got to cover the House for half the year, why don't we start with you? Who would be your nominee for House Member of the Year?
I mean, I would definitely have to start with Mike Shirkey, of course. I mean, the biggest legislative issue of the year was right to work, and he was the man leading the charge on that. I mean, he was out in front long before it was passed, so I think he definitely deserves a lot of credit there.
Well, and don't forget Obamacare as well.
Oh, yeah, very true. On the health exchange, he played a key role in, you know, the state not pursuing a state-based exchange and delaying on that subject.
And you can argue, well, we never got anywhere with that, but the fact is he actually won that debate against the governor who wanted that money to go, well, first of all, to have a state-based exchange that got nixed, and then the governor still wanted that $9.8 million planning grant just so the administration could do something along those lines, and that got nixed as well. So he won both battles, really.
He didn't shy away from major confrontation, obviously, this year.
Susan, who would give me another nominee?
You know, I'd have to say that the House member who has the most experience, Judd Gilbert, chair of the Tax Policy Committee, he's always done kind of the yeoman's work on a lot of these thorny tax issues. He was kind of one of the ones who had sorted through all of the Michigan business tax surcharge hoo-ha. This year, he helped get through the personal property tax changes. I think he's a behind-the-scenes player, but when it comes to policy, he does an awful lot.
And the House benefited from his experience, absolutely.
Yeah.
Emily, who would you say would be a nominee for House Member of the Year?
Well, you know, I don't have the pleasure of covering the House until 5 in the morning or anything. I leave that to y'all. But I do follow a lot of policy issues. And in the natural resources realm this year, I think obviously Proposal 3 caught a lot of people's eyes. But that was the 25% renewable energy standard was far from the only environmental issue to go through this year. And I think that all of the changes that did happen went through Frank Foster's committee, and he effectively navigated a lot of really tricky issues for his district. I mean, he has a lot of coastline in his district, maybe more than anyone else, I'm not sure, but a lot of water and a lot of people that are really concerned about environmental issues, and he managed to get through a lot of changes that, you know, environmentalists haven't been very comfortable with.
You know, my favorite was the Dark Sky Preserve. For us star watchers in this room,
that's true.
The Dark Sky Preserve was clutch, even though conservatives didn't necessarily like it.
But there were a lot of other issues that came through as well. So
I may be wrong on this, Emily. Did you nominate Frank Foster last year?
I do not recall.
Do you remember, Susan?
That sounds familiar. I'm not sure.
Well, we'll have to go back and listen. Okay. I don't quite remember myself.
Well, his archives, I'm sure, will tell.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I'm going to give my nominee. I'm going to nominate John Walsh. I think John Walsh has done a fine job crafting a medical marijuana regulation package that maybe not pleased everybody, was sensible and a good first step into trying to craft what we're going to do as far as regulating this in the long term. Establishing the doctor-patient relationship was important, and also kind of, you know, getting the first steps going into how are we going to regulate this? And, you know, the next step obviously is going to be distribution, but he started along that way. Got a key legislative win in lame duck as well, getting his package or his bill through that would allow some community colleges to offer some four-year degrees in very specialized areas, something that somebody has been working on in the House for the last 6 years. He's been doing it for the last four. I was very impressed that he was able to get that through. And also, I think as Speaker Pro Tem, I think he does a fair job as far as trying to get people to speak on the floor. Obviously, we had some snafus in the middle of the year with a couple of House members. But I think, by and large, he does a fair job allowing people their time to speak. And maybe it's not his decision in the end, but he ends up becoming the face of that. Okay, well, we did have an executive decision prior to our taping here, and we are going to award the House Member of the Year to Mike Shirky. And it's just hard not to, considering that right to work was the major policy initiative this year, something we never thought we were going to see. And, you know, like it or not, he was an efficient force behind the scenes to make this happen. He whipped his caucus. He made sure who was going to be there for voting, and if there was some undecideds and they needed to get to 56 vote, he was there to help get them there. And, you know, Craig, I mean, you just can't underestimate what he did there with Obamacare. Jace Bolger wanted some type of state exchange. Gail Haynes, the chair of that Health Policy Committee, wanted some kind of exchange. But he worked behind the scenes to demolish it. I don't know what other way to say it. I mean, it just didn't happen. It failed in committee and didn't come up for a House vote. So he scored two huge victories.
Yeah, and he was in many ways the face of that right to work push. I mean, a lot of the protesters who were in the gallery on Thursday when the House took up the first right to work bill didn't know who many of the lawmakers were. But when Mike Shirky walked out on the floor, I heard people calling out Shirky from up in the gallery. So I mean, people knew who he was. People knew he was the one pushing this legislation, and in the end, he was successful.
Well, let's move on to the Senator of the Year, and Susan, you cover the Senate for us. Why don't you start with our first nomination there?
I'd have to give it to Senate Appropriations Chair Roger Kahn. He has the thankless task of trying to keep track of an almost $50 billion budget. He is someone who's not just concerned about the tax side, but also the spending. He's always there to remind people, well, if you vote for something like sales tax on the difference, that's going to blow a hole in the budget. What are you going to do about that? He kind of raised the red flag on our new health care claims tax. That's an unresolved issue going into next year, but he's been on top of that. He's trying to find a solution to a pretty sizable shortfall that we've got there. He also sponsored the MIPSRS reform, something that very few people ever thought we'd see.
Senate Bill 1040, which I think Chuck Moss called the most significant reform that had been done this entire legislature. He was the sponsor.
He was. And, you know, he tried to bring both sides together. You know, he had a lot of people who wanted to go right to a 401k plan. Of course, he had a lot of people on the union side wanting to keep things the same. He was trying to find a way to forge that middle ground. And in the end, that's pretty much what we ended up with.
Emily, you got a nominee?
You know, I'm going to go with natural resources again, just because I think it's an area that we've seen a lot of changes in recently. And I think just in sheer volume of legislation, Senator Casperson has come out with bill after bill after bill
he
after
has.
Bill after
that,
bill.
That was a packed agenda there at the end of the year. That was pretty amazing.
And it wasn't just at the end of the year, though. Really, I mean, people have been watching him for new environmental, natural resources type legislation for a couple years now, and a lot of his bills have gotten a lot of discussion, and I think that there are environmentalists quaking in their boots for what he may do next.
Well, and just for a couple of examples, the gray wolf hunting season that the Natural Resources Commission is going to be able to do, and the mining changes that are supposed to help the Upper Peninsula.
Yeah, those are two of the ones that are obviously on our mind most recently, but there have been a lot of other changes, structural changes to the Natural Resources Commission, and I believe the trust fund at some point as well, and just kind of changes administratively in Natural Resources Administration, and I mean, he's really gotten through a lot of, I mean, things that may not look large on their own, but when you put it all together, it's a mountain of stuff.
And the other thing I think Kasperson has for him, he was the lead on the transit. The Southeast Michigan Transit Package, that the first time that bill has gone to the governor in, what, 30, 40 years of trying, he was the lead to get that through the Senate, get the momentum going into the House. So good work on his part of getting that through.
Definitely, and it's not just the natural resources area he's had an interest in. So
I'm going to have my nominee be Randy Richardville, the Senate Majority Leader. And you know, when we started these awards last year, I shied away from leaders just because they do get a lot of publicity. But really, I think Randy Richardville had a very enormous task this year to try and manage a caucus that, while it's a supermajority, is not always necessarily on the same page. This right-to-work discussion obviously maybe is not something that he necessarily wanted to get into, but as the leader of a caucus that wanted to go in that direction, he listened to his caucus and, you know, has been able to navigate the rocky waters. It's very much a thankless job, but I think as far as getting things going through the floor and getting them passed, you know, he was instrumental in getting that Mike Ilitch property through. He was the first one out to try and push that through. I think he's just done a real good job. It's a hard, stressful job, and I do think he needs props for that.
Yeah, I would totally agree. You know, one thing that is that you'll hear from leaders is, your job becomes harder the bigger the caucus. I mean, we saw that with Andy Dillon and the Democrats once he went from 58. And, you know, it's hard to herd cats, and that's what your job is as leader. Even if philosophically you might all be on the same page, every member has their priority. And, you know, in this lame duck, I think pretty much everybody got all their priorities because they went all night and had some very long sessions. But, you know, it does take a skilled leader to listen, to make your caucus happy, especially when you've got such a controversial issue like right to work.
All right, Craig, do you have a nominee?
Yeah, I think definitely Senator Caswell deserves some consideration here. I mean, he's very deliberative about all the bills. He reads each one, and he's willing to consider each issue individually. And, for example, he voted no on the emergency manager replacement and kind of went against his caucus there.
Well, I think the other thing, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for somebody who goes ahead and reads every single bill beforehand, and that's not because the Secretary of the Senate's up there reading them. I've always been impressed with the work that he's done, and that's a good nominee. We also had one more nominee on the list, too, Susan, Mike Knopfs.
You know, Mike Knopfs is the head of the Energy and Tech Committee, and obviously there are always important issues. I think that's going to come to the forefront next year with the governor's agenda. He's somebody who has a lot of experience. You know, he came into the Senate in a special election, so assuming that he wins re-election again in 14, he'll have the most experience of anyone, and I think it shows in the way he handles things. He's, you know, a former Michigan State Trooper, somebody who is pretty sympathetic to labor. And on the issue of right to work, he was willing to stand up there and justify his vote against it, talk to his local press, talk to the local folks there, didn't run and hide. And, you know, from his perspective, he didn't see this as being an economic win. Going against, you know, folks like Mike Shirky, he lost the battle, but he wasn't afraid to say what he thought.
Well, we did talk about this also beforehand. The executive committee met, and we are going to give the Senator of the Year award to Roger Kahn. I just kind of piggybacking on Susan's nomination earlier, I've been really impressed with the work Roger Kahn has done as Senate Appropriations Chair. Obviously, he entered the job, and folks in the Capitol know some of the problems that he had with, you know, with the cell phone and so forth. And you know, John Gleason made fun of him on the floor, but I got to say, this guy has been the most accessible, open, senator that I think there is always willing to explain what's going on with the budget process, is very generous with his time with the media, and just not MERS, but I think all media, and just explaining the process and you know, what the state's budget situation is. And to see through Senate Bill 1040, the one that made the reforms to MIPSRS when there wasn't consensus in his caucus, I think speaks a lot to his leadership and his ability to get some very significant reforms through. And then also he did the medical malpractice reforms. Obviously, the entire package didn't go through, but he did get a couple of wins in that and some changes that maybe would make the economic climate a little easier or better. Maybe not easier is the right word, but better for physicians. So our Senator of the Year is Senator Roger Kahn. The last category we're going to do is Democrat of the Year, and we've got some nominees for that. Craig, why don't you kick us off with your nominee for Democrat of the Year?
I think there are a lot of choices here in this category. A lot of people were very out front on different things. I would have to start with I think Brandon Dillon is a strong candidate. I mean, he was out in front on the Schmidt on the Roy Schmidt controversy. He was really a leading voice for the Democrats on that subject. And then on right to work, the biggest issue of the year, I think he gave the defining speech from the House Democrats on right to work. The speech was, he was so passionate in that speech that afterward I heard Republicans saying, "Great speech, Brandon, great speech," which, you know, that's a really good sign, I guess, for him.
He didn't get any no votes from it, though. But it was
yeah, they were still willing to say, yeah, recognize this is a good speech, and you're really thorough, and you were behind this idea, so you got to give them credit for that.
Susan, who would be your nominee?
I would give it to Gretchen Whitmer, and I know she got her nomination or award last year, but you know, we have obviously Republican leadership. From top to bottom in this state at the state level. She's the highest ranking Democrat in the state. And so if there's a Democrat out there, I think that anybody knows it's her. She is very vocal, you know, whether it was with the anti-bullying legislation, with that religious and moral exemption. Her video went viral. I think she got several hundred thousand YouTube hits. That was a national story. She was there in solidarity on Vaginagate with Lisa Brown and Barb Byram and helped organize the vagina monologues on the Capitol step. With the right to work vote, you know, she was on CNN. You know, she was the Democrat they showed, you know, shouting in the Capitol Rotunda, saying that we're there for you, even though we didn't win this one. Mm-hmm. And certainly she's somebody who is thinking very seriously about challenging Snyder in 2014. So I'd have to say that she would earn another nomination this time around.
You know, Susan touched briefly on, quote, Vaginagate, although I'm opposed to putting gate in back of everything just because it makes everything sound as monumental as Watergate when I do not think this was.
I think Emily makes a very...
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to go with the joint nomination of Lisa Brown and Barb Byram. Really turned that censure, which could have been a small procedural, unnoticed thing, into a really big win. A Democratic talking point, you know? I mean, not just in the state even, but nationally. Lisa Brown and Barb Byram were names that you heard on national television, and I think that to be able to do that in a minority in the legislature is pretty impressive. And, you know, they followed up. Lisa Brown appeared at a lot of events, and I believe sent even out, like, a Democratic fundraising-type things during the election, and I think that the enraged women vote was a significant demographic, and that helped the Dems pick up a couple of seats. So, and Barb Byram, I will say, it was just, she's everywhere. She's at everything, every protest, every rally. You can find her out and about talking to people, and I think that being a strong woman and a strong leader has helped her as well, and obviously wish her the best in her future endeavors. Treasurer here, so.
She's going to be the clerk. She's going to be your clerk and our clerk.
She'll
here
be
in
my
Hingham
clerk, yes.
Yeah, she's going to be all our clerks here. Don't tell that to Eric Schurzing. You might get mad. My nominee is going to be Tim Grimmel, and let me tell you why. I mean, at the beginning of the year, Tim Grimmel was not even a member of this legislature. He was an Oakland County commissioner, and now by the end, he has risen to become not just the House Minority Leader, but a unanimous choice for House Minority Leader. I mean, this is somebody who didn't seek this position right away, was approached to run for this position, and just gradually got more and more and more support until by the time Election Day rolled around, he was it. And the only other person who was going to run had conceded, and he was going to be the person who did it.
You know, I'd say that with Grimal ascending to this position, though not as Speaker, as I'm sure he wanted, this is pretty much a repudiation of the Andy Dillon days. Because, yeah, remember, he was very seriously considering primarying Andy Dillon's right-hand man, Tim Melton.
Yeah.
Because people said, we want a real Democrat. In the end, he decided not to do it, but Tim Melton left for Students First, the education reform group in California, and he got in the special election. And, you know, I think you'd have to say that the caucus is smaller, but it's definitely shifted to the left from the days of when Democrats were running the place.
I just want to throw in a plug for Tim Grimal's early days, because I had the pleasure of being in Rochester Community Schools when he was on the school board there. And I just want to say that he's obviously a very even-keeled person of good character and a lot of integrity now, but he was back then too. And as a high school kid, he would call my cell phone, which I was very excited to get at 16.
No kidding.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I had a question, when I asked him a question at a school board meeting, he would take...
As a student journalist.
No, as a, just a student.
No kidding. Wow.
And I was on student council, but he would take the time to give me a call back, explain a vote, or explain what was going on, which I think was really a kind thing to do then. And obviously, he's pretty generous with his time and his talents. So,
well, and I think already, I think in the first few weeks that we've seen of him in this new role, or will be a new role, I've been really impressed. I mean, he is not backing down. He's taken the fight right to the Republicans. And now, you know, some could argue, well, maybe that isn't the right idea, and it's a confrontational tone, but that's what the Democrats want right now, and that's what they're feeling right now. They're feeling like they're getting stomped on, and they want somebody to go back in swinging. They have not been able to get really much of anything playing Mr. Nice Guy, so it's the end of Mr. Nice Guy, and I think they've found somebody to be that bulldog, and so far, I gotta say, he's done a pretty good job, Craig.
Yeah, he's definitely accessible. He's putting himself out there in front of the media, and after the House passed Right to Work, he was the legislator who was standing up and trying to do amendments on every bill that the House was considering. He was the one whose voice had to be getting tired after doing it all, but I think it's also important to keep in mind how amazing it is that he got so much support for the leader of that caucus, because as the members will tell you, that caucus, in that caucus, there are people with a lot of opinions and a lot of varying opinions. So it's pretty amazing that he was able to get as much support as he did.
Well, as our listeners can tell, I mean, this was a very tough vote, because I think all of the people that we mentioned were very worthy. Again, after our executive meeting on this subject, we did conclude on Lisa Brown as our Democrat of the Year, and not only just for the Vaginagate stuff, as Emily talked about, but this is a person on the Education Committee who was the leading voice against things like the Education Achievement Authority, which ended up not getting out of committee, and obviously there were other factors involved. It just wasn't her. I'm not going to say that, but she was a leading voice on that. Also, this is a woman who got redistricted out of her job and ran for Oakland County Clerk and won that job, beating the current office holder, Bill Bullard, and, you know, doing so, I think, in fairly convincing fashion. Her national profile, I mean, who would think that a state representative would have the kind of profile she did this summer, and yet she did. Her and Barb Byram taking advantage of that situation, like you mentioned, Emily, where they were censured on the floor for some of their past comments, taking that and bringing it to the media, just realizing the astuteness of what a great move that would be PR-wise, and us in the media just flopped right on this. Oh my gosh, you're silencing two House members, you're silencing women, and Susan, I think she poured a lot of cold water on that abortion debate because of it.
She did. Now, of course, in the end, in lame duck, they did pass a lot of the abortion legislation, but, you know, I think you can make the case that by highlighting especially that 20-week barrier that we were going to have, that made Governor Snyder take a second look, and that was an absolute requirement to get that out of the bill if that was going to be signed by him. So, you know, if that had just slipped on by without all the pomp and circumstance, we might have that in legislation today.
An extremely resilient year, I think, for Lisa Brown, and I think deserving, even though it was close between Tim Grimmel, I got to say, just for the body of work, a resilient year for Representative Lisa Brown. She will be our Democrat of the Year. Well, very good, guys. We just chewed up 25 minutes just talking about that. Maybe it'll be less after we take out the blooper reel. But
oh, yeah, he said you wouldn't tell anyone.
Hopefully I don't leave it in there.
Do you want to leave the executive committee in there because it makes us seem like we're Soviet Union.
Yeah, I thought this was a democratic process for democratic leaders.
Well, it is a democratic process. I mean, everybody had
all
a vote.
All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
The executive committee just has a couple extra votes. So one of which our leader, John Roerink, not able to participate, but he had a voice in the final decisions as well. So, well, thank you all for that. Happy New Year. This was a great year, I think. I think we all had a very tiring year and going to be looking forward to 2013 as we wrap up all on this year. So very good. Craig Mauger, Susan Demas, Emily Lawler, thank you much. And I'm Kyle Malin. Until next year for our first edition of MERS Monday for 2013, take care.